Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Survival Jobs, a podcast in collaboration with Broadway World. My name is Samantha Dawn Titzelow, and this is Jason A. Coons. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Samantha Dawn Titzelow.
How are you?
Jinx. Good. Jinx. Pull me a soda. No, just, you know, busy as always. How about yourself?
How's your survival job, Jason?
Stressful. You know? And now I have this little guy with his fresh haircut.
Oh, Ziggy. For those of you just listening, Jason has the cutest dog. His name is Ziggy. He's so fluffy, and he does look fresh AF with his haircut.
Yeah, he just got a haircut. So for those who are watching the video, you can see Ziggy looking sharp for the
Ziggy
ladies
with
out
a
there.
Haircut. Jason, I have to talk to you. I recently started watching this Jeffrey Dahmer series on Netflix. Have you watched?
Yikes. No, I'm very torn on watching. I have a lot of opinions.
Okay. Yes. I have to tell you, I watched the first two episodes and I think I can no longer watch.
Why?
Because it makes me sick.
Yeah, I believe that.
It is, like, no spoilers to the listeners.
I mean, it's a true story.
Okay, so Evan Peters.
Evan Peters, yeah.
Is a phenomenal actor. Like, I was watching this guy's performance and felt sick to my stomach. And I just am so conflicted on continuing to watch. Because it made me ill. But it is like, I've been reading all of these articles and seeing all these things on social media saying that it is like the number one streamed show on Netflix ever.
Oh, ever, really?
Ever. And also Ryan Murphy in the same week had this show be number one and then a movie, which the name is slipping my mind, also on Netflix, number one. This guy is crazy. Ryan Murphy. Like, what?
Yeah.
Does he go to sleep? Like, I can't even do my survival job and this podcast and also maybe go for a run. Like, how?
Well, he has a lot of help. So.
And a lot of money. Yeah.
A lot of money and a lot of help. Like, I hate that meme that's like, oh, you have the same amount of hours in the day as Beyonce. And I'm like, well, Beyonce has a personal trainer and a chef and a nutritionist and nanny and 14 personal assistants. So, yes.
Thank you for saying that, because sometimes I am too hard on myself and I'm like, gosh, I'm not doing enough and I'm too stressed and X, Y, Z. But you're right. We at this time are just a one person band.
Yeah. And please, Beyonce fans, don't come for me. I was just highlighting the difference between the queen.
Oh my gosh. I never put on survival jobs. There we go. I didn't put on our survival jobs background.
Oh, it's all right. There it is now.
And my phone just went off. Sorry.
It's all right. It's life. No, but I've been torn about watching and not watching, just because I've heard how good it is. And Evan Peters is a phenomenal actor. I love him and like everything he does, but I guess it just comes to the point where a lot of the family members of the victims of Jeffrey Dahmer were like really upset because they weren't contacted. And it's not the first time the story has been depicted in recent times. It's just been like, I think like 12 other documentaries and movies and stuff. And the families of the victims feel like every time there's a new release, they're kind of having to relive this awful, awful thing. Like, can you imagine losing someone you loved and like every couple of years getting reminded. And I think there's like a really big court scene, which one of the victims is sisters, like, because like the court stream was like live back then, or like it was filmed back then and like released, and like they got someone, obviously an actor, to portray the sister, and she was like, it was like reliving that again, like seeing herself, like seeing someone saying her exact words, like looking like her, was like really traumatizing. And so I guess I've been really torn about watching it, but like, I don't know, I think it's important to remember those things. And, you know, I think the difference, I'm sorry, I'm going on a long tirade on this, but I think the difference in why I was thinking about watching it was because, like, for example, the police really failed a lot of the victims because, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer was a white man, and he got away with this because, like, the police, like, believe whatever he said. Like, there's a famous case of, like, the little Asian boy who was, like, one of his victims who was, like, 14 years old and who had escaped. Yeah. And then the police, like, sent him right back to Jeffrey Dahmer.
This was the police officers that I stopped watching. Oh, was that? When I was I think I have to take a break or be done.
Yeah.
He's like, this is my boyfriend and he's wasted. And the neighbors are like, this is a child. Like, the neighbors are there and they're like, hey, police, this is a child. Like, I don't think he's drunk. And they were like, man, that's his boyfriend. And I don't know how accurate the show is. I'm sorry I interrupted you. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
He like brought the police officers into his home and was like, look, there's photos of us. Like, this is our home together. And the photos were like a Polaroid of the kid, like, naked laying. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, which highlights the homophobia and the racism that allowed Jeffrey Dahmer to attack, what, like over 30 victims? Mostly men of color. 17, well, whatever, too many.
17, because I Googled a lot. I have not watched the whole thing, but I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. So I've been on the fence, but I might check it out because I think I need to be more educated before I speak. I mean, I've been speaking so much about it, but I've been reading. Yeah. Been doing a lot of reading and a lot of listening.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to pick it back up.
It's heavy.
It's heavy and it's sick. It made me feel like it's so hard to talk about this. I say, but that's when you know that they're portraying it right. And I don't know if there's a right way to portray this when I actually, my body feels ill from watching this. So I did just want to speak about that because it is all over. I feel like everyone's trying to watch or people are like, I cannot. My mom binged it because she lived through it actually happening. So she was like, I was so sick watching it, but I lived through it. And I couldn't stop.
Yeah. I remember being a kid and like, it's not funny, but my older cousins would like scare me. They'd be like, oh my God, Jeffrey Dahmer's going to get you.
Oh because, my God.
Because he was like, that was like a big thing in the 90s. And like, he was a real person. And I remember being so scared. I remember I was like visiting my cousins in Virginia. And they were like, oh, he lives in Virginia. He didn't. He lived in Milwaukee. But they were like, oh, he lives. They're trying to scare me because I was like a little kid. Like, I was like,
oh my gosh. You know,
what, like 5 or 6 or whatever, whenever he got caught. So I remember being terrified of Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah. Yikes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, and one last thing I'll say before you wrap up was that the police officers who let that little boy go, like, I think they just retired after or something. And they were just like, the Milwaukee Police Department was like praising them for like what a great job they've done, and people on social media were like, oh really, like what a great job these guys did, and they took down their tweet because they were like, because this show came out and reminded people of how they failed. They literally failed, you know. Anyway, sorry I went on a rant. I wasn't expecting to talk about it so much.
It's so interesting, this show, because there's such a for shows like this that are based, that are real, it's like there's such a fine line between being like, oh my God, it's done so well and Evan Peters is so good, to being like, yikes, like this is real. And then I'm a psychopath and I'm like locking my door. I believe he's dead. I believe Jeffrey Dahmer is now
passed. They murdered him in prison,
correct?
But sorry, I'm spoilers like all over.
Sorry everyone, major spoilers. I'm like locking my door. I did the same thing when the People versus OJ came out. I binged it and then I was like locking my door, like OJ was gonna come to Brooklyn and get me.
Well, what? You know, you'd never be too safe nowadays because people are insane. So especially as a woman. I don't want to speak for women, but correct. Y'all need to do everything you can do to protect yourselves against these crazy and insane we're people, especially naked. Men out there who are disgusting.
A lot of things. Anyway, not to take a hard turn to change the subject, but
please do.
Let's get off of this Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes.
Anything you've been watching or reading, Jay, that's filling you artistically?
Well, I have a friend who's in The Luckiest Girl Alive. It's a new Netflix show.
Oh my God.
His name is Carson McCormick, and he plays this really I'm not sure if you know anything about it or if
I watched the trailer the other
day. Oh yeah. It's really good. And I'm not just saying that because he's my friend, but it's a really good. It's based on a book called Luckiest Girl Alive, and it's a new Netflix series. And I remember talking to him a couple months ago, and he's like, people are gonna hate me when this comes out. And I was like, no, everybody knows you're just acting. Then I watched and I was like, yikes. he plays the villain, and he plays it very well. I will say that. Check it out. I recommend you watching it. Maybe we can talk about it next week if you watch it this week.
Yeah, I'll try to watch. And so then it can be our topic.
It's a quick watch. It's only like 90 minutes, I think. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And what's Mila Kunis, right?
Mila Kunis. She's phenomenal. I never thought about Mila Kunis being a phenomenal actress, and like she really like nailed it.
Oh, great. And actually.
Finn Wittrock.
We love.
Yeah. And my girl, what's the mom? What's her name? Oh, I can't remember her name on top of my head, but the mom from Friday Night Lights, and she's been in American Horror Story, and it sucks. I wasn't planning on talking about it, but
yeah, she's so good. I see her face.
Yeah, me too. Dang it.
I see her face. I don't know. I don't know. It's something in my mind, but she is fierce. Shout out. DM us, you guys, when you remember her name.
I'm gonna look it up.
Just keep
talking. I'll look it up.
Keep talking. Well, I do want to talk about
Connie Britton.
Yes, Connie Britton. Yes.
We love Connie Britton.
Tim Burton. I'm confused. Jason, I'm so excited because I'm going to see the invited dress rehearsal of Kimberly Akimbo tonight.
Exciting, yes.
And this will lead us into our guest.
Yeah.
And we'll talk a lot about this in the interview with Stephen Boyer. You guys, wait till you hear this episode. He's so funny and has so much wisdom, and it's a really good episode. But I saw Kimberly Akimbo off-Broadway at the Atlantic. Is that where it was? I'm embarrassed if I'm saying the wrong thing, but I think it was months ago. And I was in awe of this show and these performances.
Nice.
I literally laughed so hard, cried so hard, gasped. Like I was like speaking out loud in this show, like an idiot. Like people next to me are probably like, can this girl be quiet? It's just such an incredible show. And I really feel like nothing we've ever seen before. So I'm so excited to go see what the Broadway production is like, you know, because there's always changes and adjustments. So how many times can I say I'm so excited? But
some of the younger cast were at BroadwayCon when I had gone, and I got to go to that panel, and it was so cool to hear how excited they were about the transfer and, you know, the work that they're doing. So it's really cool that it's finally here. Some previews, right? But official opening?
Tonight will be the dress rehearsal, and then tomorrow, which is Wednesday. We're talking to you guys from the past. Wednesday will be the first preview. This is coming out on Thursday, October 13th. And that is going to be the second preview. So you guys should check it out, because I really feel like once this starts getting buzz and people start seeing it, you're not going to get an easy ticket. So y'all, check it out at the booth.
I heard it here first. Check it out at the booth, y'all.
Yeah, check it out. You heard it here first on Broadway Roll, on Survival Jobs.
Yeah.
And so we were so lucky to be able to talk to Stephen Boyer this week. Big week. It's a big week for him. And he spent, an hour chatting with us about Survival Jobs, about his journeys. So excited.
And it was shocking. There's a part, we're going to have a little spoiler, where he said he didn't work for 10 years. And I was shocked. And, it really puts things into perspective. And I said something really cheesy after, but, it was like a really good reminder of like, to keep going, no matter what, no matter how difficult it may be, no matter how many people like naysay you, like if you really believe in yourself and you really this is really your dream and it's really your goal. Like, don't lose sight of it, you know. And then somebody, you know, it just takes one person, as you'll hear, to believe in you and to really hold you and to form you and say, hey, here's an opportunity. And of course, be prepared, be ready, and be ready for your opportunity, right? So prepare, but like, don't stop. If it's really something you want, like, don't stop.
Yes, you guys, do not stop. Let me tell you, let's tell everyone a little bit about Stephen before they listen.
For sure. Start us off.
Okay.
So Boyer.
Okay. Stephen Boyer recurs on the second season of the HBO Max series Love Life. Stephen starred on the NBC comedy Trial and Error and can be seen in the upcoming feature-filled Borderlands. Boyer was nominated for a Tony Award for the Broadway run of Hand to God, as well as an Obie and a Lucia Lortel Award for his work in the show's off-Broadway production. Named one of the future legends of New York theater by Time Out New York, Stephen recently starred in Assassins, which was a part of Encore's Off-Center series, as well as MTC's The Explorer Club and Second Stage's production of Modern Terrorism. He also played the title role of Trevor in Nick Jones' darkly funny Trevor, performed with Lesser America.
In addition to his work in the theater, Boyer has appeared in Steven Spielberg's Bridge of Spies and in Martin Scorsese's film The Wolf of Wall Street, as well as Hustlers, starring Jennifer Lopez and Constance Wu. Boyer recently recurred on the NBC series Chicago Fire and has appeared in such TV series as The Blacklist, Orange is the New Black, The Good Wife, The Crazy Ones, Louie, Mom, Person of Interest, Law and Order, and Ed. He'd be working, y'all. He starred in and produced the Cher independent web sitcom pilot from Emily Chadwick Weiss, and he is a graduate of the Juilliard School and is also a member of the Ensemble Studio Theater. Let's get into it, y'all.
And now can be seen in Kimberly Akimbo at the Booth Theater.
Yes. Did I miss that? No.
No.
Okay, good.
It's a new.
Am I just not reading correctly?
No, cool. You did great. You did great. Enjoy the episode, you guys.
Awesome. Enjoy. Welcome, Stephen. We're so happy to have you on Survival Jobs, a podcast.
Great to be here.
Yeah, where are you zooming in from?
My house in Windsor Terrace, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Yes.
Just moved here like a couple weeks ago, and I love it.
And congratulations. How's it going so far? Yeah, congrats, yeah.
Thanks. I used to live in a railroad apartment with my three-year-old and my wife, and it was like, it was impossible.
It was a lot happening, I'm sure.
There's a lot going on. It's like everyone was in the same room all the time.
You're like, it's time.
It's time.
That's huge. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And
yeah.
Speaking of huge things happening in your life, this is a big week for Kimberly Akimbo, which I spoke to you about a little bit before we recorded. I'm a huge fangirl. What are they calling the Kimberly fans? They're calling them something. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
There's something going around, unless I'm completely delusional, but I don't know what it is. So I guess I'm not a true fan.
Nope.
Kimettes.
I don't know if that is it, but I will, going forward, call myself a Kimet. Kimet?
Sure. We're starting it right now.
Kimet. Yeah, we're starting it.
On Survival Jobs, a podcast. There we go.
Survival Jobs, a podcast. Well, so congratulations on the show, too. We'll talk about it a little bit further into the interview. It's a big week for you, and you bought a house, and you're in Brooklyn, and everything's happening.
Everything's happening.
Amazing. Yeah. Before we, so this interview, the show is called Survival Jobs, a podcast. We love to talk to artists about their survival jobs and how they got to where they are. If you could describe what survival jobs means to you, what would you say? Like when you hear survival job?
He's like, oh gosh, this is a stressful one.
The reason, you know, we started asking this is because we've interviewed a ton of people, and I feel like the definition of survival job varies from person to person.
It's so, just the thing you do to keep, you know, body and soul together. Like, it's the thing you do to pay your bills that you really don't care about. It's just facts. A job. It's just something, you know. Also, to me, the best survival job was always the one that, like, you got paid in cash, or it was like off the books or something like that, because it was really about just trying to make the most money possible in the shortest amount of time so you could get back to doing what you really wanted to do.
That's so true. That cash money under the table, baby.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, do you have a favorite survival? I'm stuttering. Do you have a favorite survival job you've had over the years? One that maybe impacted your career positively?
Oh, no, none of them impacted my career positively. Not at all.
All right.
He's well, like, Cargo. Oh, my God.
I had a few. I haven't had as many as I thought I would, but I've had some ones that are really bizarre. Talking about money under the table and like getting paid in cash. Those jobs are really hard to find. I actually had a really hard time like finding a survival job, period, just because you always have to know somebody, and you know, I have no resume for a survival job. But a friend of mine was working at this bakery on like Avenue A, and then it was like this tiny, just like a little counter with like coffee and baked goods, and the bakery was in the back. There was always one person. It was just one person behind the counter, and that was it. And it stayed open late until like 10, and late for a bakery.
Yeah.
And she she was like, "Oh, I'm quitting my job because I got held up. Somebody came in and held me up with a gun at like 9:30 at night, and I'm the only one there." And I'm like, take all the money. Take it all.
Take the money. Take the pastries.
Take the money. Take the croissants.
Take
his
coffee.
Take the croissants.
You want some extra cream?
Yeah. Take the oat milk.
Take whatever you want.
The common milk.
The most expensive milks.
Oh, my God.
Take all the milks.
All the milks.
So, but, like, she told me, and she was like, yeah, and it didn't really set in until later. I'm like, wow, that guy had a gun, and. Huh, that was a really dangerous situation. So she quit. And when she told me that she quit, I'm like, so that means there's a job available, right? Now they need someone, right? And she's like, sure, they do. So I took that job after she was like, I got held up, so I had to get out. I'm like, good, so finally an opening.
You're like, I'll take it. I can get held up.
So I took it. I took it, and you know, like I had to get up at like 5 a.m, and it was, which is not good for someone who works in theater. Getting up at 5 a.m. is not.
No,
Our bodies don't like to do that.
No.
Yeah.
So that job sucked. I did not get held up at gunpoint, but
thank God.
Question.
I didn't last there for very long.
Were you baking also? Like when you were
baking. I actually would have been way more interested in the baking side of things because I talked to like the head baker and was like, what is this? They were, you know, experimenting. They were like, we're going to do some like sesame miso muffins. I'm like, ooh, show me the miso muffins.
Yeah.
But no, I was just like slinging coffee and croissants.
Slinging coffee and croissants.
Slinging coffee on everybody.
I love that. Jason and I worked a survival job together at a restaurant, and the owner always said, if anyone ever comes in to rob this place, just give them everything.
Yeah. Give them the restaurant.
Yeah. When you were saying that, I was like, oh, this, I mean, luckily, not that I know of, Jay, nothing ever like that happened.
No.
Ever like that?
No, okay. I used to work at Starbucks too, and I would work like the closing. I was like the closing shift supervisor, and it was the same thing. They'd be like, "Yeah, if anybody comes, don't do anything." I'm like, I wasn't gonna do it. I would just, they could take whatever they want. Take the chairs. Like, I'm not defending this place at all.
Yeah,
I do think once somebody broke in and stole a lot of tequila from this place we worked at. I mean, that's a good thing to steal. You're like, stocked up. Margaritas for everyone. Okay, so it seems like you don't have like a favorite survival job.
Favorite makes it seem like there's one that I'm like, oh, that was great. I really love doing that. I didn't like doing any of them.
Yeah,
but there was.
I can relate.
Yeah.
There was one that was really weird, and kind of blows people's minds when I tell them about this. But it was. This was another thing that, like, I just got paid, like, it was, I got paid, you know, per, it was a phone call thing, calling in to morning radio shows in different parts of the country. Because if you've ever listened to morning radio, they're always like, okay, we're gonna do War of the Roses. We're gonna have Bob thinks that Karen is cheating on him, so he's gonna have Karen. Karen's gonna get a dozen roses for free, and she gets to send it to whoever she wants. We're gonna see if she sends them to Bob.
Oh, I love that.
And then she's like, "Oh, can you send them to Rick?" And then I'm like, "Who's Rick? Who's Rick?" And she's like, "Oh my God, Bob, is that you?" And I'm like, I knew you were cheating on me. This is, I knew it from the moment.
Oh my God.
You, and he, and so this is all fake. All these things are fake on every radio station. All oh, the like.
Wow.
And so I found, I used to be a stand up. And stand up.
I can tell.
Surprise. So surprise, stand up doesn't pay well.
What, you don't, those drink tickets don't help pay the rent?
Like sometimes you're like on the road and they're like, we're going to pay you in a nachos platter. And there's like no union protecting comedians. Like there's no actors equity for comedians. So you're just kind of like, okay, I'll take the nachos. Nothing you can do. But, So this other comic was like, oh, you get up early, they connect you to like, you know, Greenville or like South Carolina or Georgia or somewhere and some radio station at like 6 a.m. And you act like you're in this crazy situation and you get paid like $50 a call. I'm like, I'm in. I am so there. I like it got really detailed. Like they would tell me, you know, this one is in Arkansas. And I would go online and I would find the like, I would go to the International Dialects of English Archive and I would find Arkansas and I'd be like, okay, how can I sound like Arkansas? And I put in way too much like backstory and research into this. So I'm good. Sure no one else
I
did this.
I love that.
This is literally an acting gig. Congrats.
It was like an acting
it
gig.
Really is.
Yeah.
But it was so, I mean, sometimes they were, it like hurt my heart. Like they would have us, like sometimes they would say, okay, nah. They would have like a little meeting with us on the phone. The DJ would be like, okay, so who's playing the guy, who's playing the girl? All right, okay. So you can, we'll bleep it out. So you just go ahead and like curse at each other. And then I want you to just like get into it, just like rip into each other. And so we would like this person that you never met, you like yeah. heard their voice over the phone. And then you had to like at 6 a.m, screaming, like my neighbors are like ready to call the police, screaming, being like, I trusted you. You ruined my life. Like everything just.
Why do I like vision you doing this in your railroad apartment?
I know. That's what I did.
Wow. Like full commitment, like full out, no marking.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I'd have to tell my wife, I'd be like, I have to go scream at a stranger in the next room. So just try and stay asleep.
Just try to stay asleep. Yeah.
Just stay asleep. Easy. And I'm in the next room just being like, it was bad.
Wow. I love that story.
We never know. You might have to play a character from Arkansas one day and then you'll have that in you already. You have that research in your body already.
Well, but this kind of ruins the magic of like,
I know
the right? like the Maury of it all, you
and
know,
then, and, like, show. And I'll like be in a cab or something and I'll hear someone listening to one of these things. And I'm like, War of the Roses. Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, gosh. Yeah. Likely story.
Dude. And then I listen, I'm like, how are they going to do? Because I know these people don't know each other. do they That's sound crazy. Like a real couple?
Yeah, you're like rating them on a scale of 1 to 10. Yeah. No, but that's so cool. And so you said you started with stand-up in your career. And you know, we did a little research and you've done Broadway, of course, and TV and film. You had a Tony Award nomination. Can you just tell us a little bit about like where your journey started, like how you got into performing?
I was like a crazy child.
Go on.
I was an insane, hyperactive kid who always like did impressions of everyone and everything that I saw on TV.
I love that.
Like, I feel like, you know, Looney Tunes cartoons kind of taught me my early acting technique. And my parents like channeled my energy by being like, oh, there's auditions for this community theater show. So let's put him on the stage. And I loved it. And I, you know, I'm from Columbus, Ohio. And so limited casting pool. I think when community theaters and like one equity theater at the time in Columbus found out that there was like a 10-year-old that does accents and and can sing and is really into like comedic timing. I was suddenly in like two and three shows at once. I'd be like in a show and rehearsing for another show at the same time.
That's so cool though.
And then trying to do like the school show too, which was always like, come on guys, this is not.
You're like, can we get more professional
at
here?
That,
come
at
on.
At that point I'm like, this, I gotta get out of here by 4 o'clock. Cause I gotta get to.
You were like booked and busy.
I was booked and busy. I was like the bookingest child actor in Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio.
And,
so good.
And then, but then I went to Juilliard and like, you know, learned to do something more than just like imitate people. And then I got out of school and I like didn't work for like, I booked a Broadway show at the booth for my first gig out of school. It was I'm Not Rappaport with Judd Hirsch and Ben Vereen as two wow. octogenarians on a park bench, and I mug them at knife point.
Wow, we have a really big dream of mugging on this episode.
I played so many muggers and drug addicts and drug dealers, and like it just became like my bread and butter was playing assholes and villains.
You gotta lean into the bread and butter, you know?
You know?
We talked about this on our last episode. Like, you gotta lean into where you're gonna get the check to then do your like passion and art.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's almost like surviving and survival jobbing.
That's right. That's right.
You know?
Yeah, you gotta survive.
Wait, so you said you booked, Broadway.
Yeah, right out of school.
Wow.
And I thought, this is going to be a breeze. And then I like didn't work for like a decade. And I kept thinking, oh, the next thing's right around the corner. It's going to be any minute now. Because I was on Broadway. And no, I didn't work for like another 10 years. I had a job here and there, but it was just like, it was rough. And I was like maxing out credit cards and it was bad. And so then I started doing stand-up because I was just so like, I needed to like get up in front of people and do something. Yeah. And so I, you know, bought some books, learned how to write some material and started doing that. Eat some nachos. I went on the road with another comic for like 4 months and actually like managed to pay my rent as a comedian, which was nice. But I ultimately didn't want to be a comedian. I wanted to be an actor.
Right.
For sure.
So I got a little show. It was directed by Moritz von Stulpnagel, who directed Hand to God later on. And I was like, yeah, I really don't work very much. And he's like, what? He's like, how is that? He's like, really? He's like, you should be working all the time. And then he ended up like kind of like being a champion of mine and like basically casting me in a ton of things over the next few years. And so I was kind of able to get back on track as an actor.
I love that. What does Lady Gaga say? It just takes one person.
Yeah. Right.
I guess that's true.
Takes one person with a crazy German name. Just takes one Moritz von Stuckneger.
That's where you really got your Tony nomination, right? Hand of God?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Look at that. Thank God for Moritz. What's his name?
Moritz.
Thank God for him. Thank God
for Moritz. You can just say Moritz. That's easy.
Moritz, yeah.
Moritz. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, it's so nice to have someone. Oh, I'm sorry, Sam.
Go ahead,
just gonna say no. It's really nice to have someone who really like believes in you and really like sees the talent in you. And it's like, hey, you need to be booked, and you're part of my tribe. So whatever that means, I'm gonna make you part of it, and I'm gonna help you get booked because you're freaking talented.
Yeah, because it's rough to keep on going out there when like the only thing you have is the belief in yourself. You're like, I know that I can do this. I know that I'm good at this, but no one else is telling you that you are. So right. you're just like in a vacuum.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes all you need is that person to say, hey, I think you're really good, to be like, shit, yes, I am. What I've been feeling this whole time is like, it's just like the extra fuel to keep it going is super important. For artists of any kind,
for sure,
to have somebody else believe in you, you know, what do they always say? Like, surround yourself with people who believe in you. But it's true. You need it. You need the surrounding. So we talked about your journey and your struggles and your decade of not working, and now you're about to be. I'm gonna like give this all positive juju. You're about to be in a hit Broadway show, Kimberly Akimbo. And I just want to talk a little bit about the show and the journey of the show and what's the whole experience been like. I mean, from an audience perspective, watching this, I've never seen anything like it. And it's amazing. Part one of that question is, let's talk about your journey in Kimberly. And then I have a follow-up.
Okay. My journey?
In like, the show, yeah. Like, how's it been? What's going on? Spill the tea.
It's been great. I mean, I kind of grew up doing musicals and then like sort of fell out of it for a very long time and then didn't come back to it until I did Assassins with Encores, and Victoria Clark was in that. And I remember being like, oh my God, I'm in a musical with Victoria Clark.
That's so Broadway.
Because I'd seen her, you know, in Light in the Piazza. I was in like the third row, and I remember seeing her like at the edge of the stage singing the song while she's crying and being like, how do you do that? How can you do that?
How, actually?
Like, no one else can do that.
Yeah.
Like, when you start bawling, it's like the first thing that goes is your voice. And she just like somehow manages to push it all out there. And I'm like, it's incredible. So I was like, this is it. This is the best time I'm ever going to have in a musical, because Victoria Clark's in it. I'm, you know, and that was Assassins, and that ran, you know, for a week because it's Encores. And then Kimberly Akimbo happens and they're like, Victoria Clark is Kim, and you're going to be her dad.
Wow.
You're going to be her dad. And so it was amazing. I mean, it was kind of like, and then to hear that we're going to Broadway, it was like my 15, 16 year old self was like jumping for joy.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, we're going to make, you know, we might record an album.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so exciting and so well deserved.
It was really exciting. And then, you know, we put it up at the Atlantic, and it really did feel different. It felt different from what else is out there. I mean, first of all, it's like, it's not like based on a movie, you know?
It's original, right?
Original. It's IP. Original.
Can you tell us a little bit about it for those who don't know?
It's, well, it's based on the play by David Lindsay Abaire that I think ran in the early 2000s off Broadway. And it was like an early big hit for him. And Janine Tesori does the music. And David writes the book and the lyrics. And they'd worked together before. And they kept, I think they did Shrek together. And ever since then, they were like, they really like got along like gangbusters and were like, we need to find something that we want to do for ourselves. And Janine was like, hey, this play, Kimberly Akimbo, this play of yours, David, I think this is a musical. And he's like, I don't know if it's a musical. He's like, I don't know if it sings. But then Janine was like, it's a musical, let's work on it. And they did workshops of it for, the way that musicals work. Janine says it takes 7 years to make a musical. And we had a 2-year break because of COVID, but it worked out.
Right.
Just 7 years.
Yeah.
That feels like COVID probably felt like seven in its own.
Yeah. I mean, but they did tons of workshops and things, and it went through a lot of different changes. And then it even went through changes between the Atlantic and Broadway. The show you're going to see, if you saw it off Broadway, I'm really curious as to, what changes are going to kind of like register with people.
Yeah.
Because it's like the thrust of the entire story and the vibe of everything is definitely the same, but there's just like tiny little surgical changes that make like a big impact for like characters and for storylines. But I'm just wondering if people are going to see it that have seen it before and register those changes, or if they're going to be so seamless that it just brings you into the world so much that you're just going to be on the ride and you're just going to be enjoying yourself too much to even, you know, think about the technical aspect of theater making.
Right. I can't wait. This show, like, hello, listeners, go get your ticket now while you can, because I feel like once this opens and people are starting to talk about it, I really think it's going to blow up. And I don't know if that's like the theater nerd in me being like, I love this so much. We're going to see. So the follow-up question too about your journey with this show is, you mentioned you're playing Victoria Clark's dad. And I don't want to give like major spoilers to everyone.
Well.
But like, can you talk about that? Because when I saw it, she was 16. Like, and you were her dad. And it was like not an inch of like pretend there. I mean, it is all freaking pretend, but you know what I mean? It was so real and,
nothing is real.
Yeah. I imagine that was a challenging process, right? So can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, that aspect of it was not so challenging because that's all Vicky. That's all Victoria Clark, because she came in here into the show knowing that, you know, she needed to be 16 in the body of an older woman. And that all came from her. It was not hard to think of her as my daughter because she was just acting like a teenage girl. You know, the tone of her voice, the rhythm of her speech, the way that she moves, everything was, it was like she was, you know, the awkward teen that is the new kid in school and is trying to make a friend. And so like the strength of her characterization made it very easy
for you to just slip into dad.
Yeah. And also it came at a strange time in my life because for a number of reasons, I just become a father myself. When we were doing it at the Atlantic, which just really like just deepened everything for me and for the character. And then, you know, there's themes of living your life for today, because we don't know how much time we all have. And
facts.
And during the course of the run, one of my parents had an accident and got very sick. And so it was my father. My father became very sick during the run at the Atlantic. And my character is dressed like my father from the late 80s through the 90s. Yeah. I'm wearing like, you know, the tan windbreaker dad jacket that he wore for a decade, and the white Reeboks that he mowed the lawn in. And like, it's Sarah Lux, our costume designer, made, it's like the 90s are her sweet spot. there was all these strange, this confluence of things in my life that were happening. It's like becoming a father, facing the prospect of, you know, your parents' mortality, and that all just folded into the show and just deepened everything. And so it became kind of like a cathartic experience to do the show, and it also became kind of like a little more painful than you wanted it to be.
Right.
But luckily the show is also hilariously funny. So it's just a joy to go to work every day.
Yeah.
Because you get to laugh and hear the audience laugh. And that's what I love about the show. It feels like it's the show that the audience like is having the best time. They're laughing. They're like, the music is making them want to dance, and they're just like in peals of hilarious laughter. And then like a moment or a line, like, will just
weeping,
pierce your heart,
and then tears.
Yeah. 100%. I keep talking about myself on this show. Sorry, but when I left Kimberly the first time, I took a selfie of my face and I was just sobbing. You just can't help it. Like, I don't even know why. I really don't know why. It is a magical, beautiful show. Congratulations. Everyone run to see the show. Can you please show us the hat?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, to our viewers.
Viewers. Okay. Look at the swag, guys.
This is, I mean, actually, I'm sorry. This is
not for
sale. This is Victoria Clark made up these hats for us for the Atlantic opening. And
it'll be at the Broadway flea market in 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Someone will get ready.
Oh my gosh.
That will be my survival job. I'll be like, these are my old programs. You want the hat?
Take it. Like he just looks like an old guy. I just had a vision of like old, like in a cloak, like at the flea market.
In a cloak.
What is he? A wizard? Like,
I don't know, the way your body language just was in the voice. I just see you like in a cloak, like in the corner at the flea market. Whatever.
Samantha thinks very highly of you, Stephen.
As soon as I get off this podcast, I'm gonna go put on my cloak.
So, I can't wait.
I mean, you
send
got
it
me.
To us.
You got
it on the Instagram to promote the episode.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. So I want to switch gears a little bit.
Okay.
And I want to know if you have, because you've been working in this industry for a long time, do you have a dream role or collaboration that you're like been eyeing, and something that's like, or a person you want to work with that you're like, I have to do this at some point in my career?
That's hard.
That's a heavy because, one, right?
Well, because the thing is like talking about like a dream role is tough, because my dream was always to do new works, new productions.
Yeah.
To like originate a character. And so to talk about like a dream part or a dream role, it's always something that has already been done that you can point to and say that part in that show. And for me, the dream is, I don't even know what the show is yet. You know, it's like, I want to read a script or meet a writer or meet a director that just understands me. I mean, it's like how Hand to God came about. It's like Rob Askins just kind of like wrote this thing and was like, hey, you want to do it? It has a puppet in it. I'm like, sure. I do a little puppet stuff. So yeah, let's do it. And then it ended up just being this full collaboration for like years that like went to three different theaters. And so like that scenario, which hardly ever happens, is really the dream.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to know if that would happen again. I really hope that it does, but it's like, you know, lightning striking, like right. Finding a writer that actually writes something that just fits your strengths so well.
Yeah, well, we're going to send you all the good vibe that happens. You know, we're going to manifest that. Manifest that for you with the cloak. Yeah.
With the cloak. It'll bring on a cloak. Light some candles.
Yeah. get some stones. Put them under your pillow.
Yeah. Very good.
Steve, is there any art, any books? I mean, I'm sure you're just freaking busy in rehearsals, but like when you do have your probably one day off or whatever, is there any kind of art that's fulfilling you right now? TV shows, books, comics?
You know what I've been doing a lot lately is I really like to learn new things, learn new skills, right?
Yeah.
I feel like if I ever feel like something is off, I'm not actively like pursuing learning a new thing right now. So I'm learning to play the drums right now, which is
so cool.
I set up like a little, you know, like the tiniest drum kit I could find. And I am, it's like therapy a little bit, because it's very active and you're hitting things.
Yes.
But it's also musical, and it's making me like listen to music differently. And it's something that I've kind of always wanted to do. I like learning new instruments, and I've never gone down the path of like, you know, percussion. So I'm playing the drums.
It sounds like you are someone who likes to make a lot of noise.
I do.
With the drums, with the fake beating screams.
You're like you sound like a loud guy.
You sound loud. You're out of the railroad now, so you can hit those drums.
Yeah.
That's great. I always wanted to learn an instrument, but I used to play the violin. Here I am talking about myself again.
You can
pick it back up.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
I think get a guitar and a chord chart. And it's like, honestly, it's one of the best instruments to teach yourself, because you can play songs, you know, very quickly.
Yeah.
I know. I was doing that like 10 years ago, and I'm like, damn it, I should have kept it up instead of quitting. My damn fingers are hurting. I was trying to teach myself guitar, and then I just quit. And I'm like, damn it, if I would have kept going, I would have been like a pro by now.
Well, get a classical guitar. The nylon string guitars are way more forgiving to learn on, because they don't cut your fingers up like the steel string guitars.
Jason,
that's my tip.
There we go. Pick it back up, Jason, and then we can make a new Survival Jobs theme song.
Yeah, you could have the Survival Jobs band.
And you come and you play the drums.
Yeah.
Yes. In 10 years, I'll be ready.
Yeah, in 10 years. This is
love that for us.
So amazing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Everyone needs to go see Kimberly. We have one more question, and then we're going to play a super fun game to end the show. Oh, God. And I think you're going to love it.
Okay.
So obviously we talked a lot about survival jobs. We have listeners who are looking for tips and advice. So do you have any advice for anybody who's listening to this that may feel stuck in a survival job and not really having their outlet for art, maybe feeling lost, flatlining?
Yeah. I mean, it's like I mentioned before, like the only thing that you have to sustain you sometimes is your belief that, like, it's almost like your secret that you carry with you. You're like, I am great at this, and other people just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's all you have, is your own like little flame that you're like, I'm not gonna let this flame blow out, because I know that it's there, and someday somebody's gonna give me a chance to show it. But it's hard. It's hard. I mean, there's no getting around the fact that it's hard.
Facts. But as Jason says.
Yeah.
Facts. Yeah. The belief and the manifestation of it all, you know?
Yeah.
Some days I feel like it's harder than others. Like some days I'm, you know, for me personally, I'm like, oh yeah, I can really do this. And other days I'd be like, damn, y'all.
I'm tired.
It's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tiring. Tired. But you know, life is tiring.
That's right. Like,
exactly.
It's like, it's all.
That is right.
Everything's like, even when you get the thing, it's like, I mean, we just got out of week two of tech, and believe me, I am very, very tired.
Let me show you this that I just discovered. Aha. This is not an ad. I wish. Aha, sparkling water.
Oh my.
It's like sparkling water with caffeine.
Oh, I want one right now.
It's incredible. Name. Because you know what? Sometimes too much coffee makes me like get so much agita and like jittery. This is a nice, like bubbly, little bit of caffeine. So
we'll
send some to the stage door.
There's the caffeinated vitamin water, the yellow vitamin water.
Oh, energy,
yellow,
right?
My favorite.
Yeah, that's mine too.
I'm just like, sometimes you don't want coffee. You're like, I need something cold and sweet.
Yeah.
And that will like make me go.
Love that one.
So,
and it's so healthy, getting your vitamins, you know?
Oh, Steven, so you're so healthy. I am so healthy. Let me tell you more about soft drinks.
Come on, let's go. Maybe they'll sponsor survival jobs. We love that.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's so important to be surrounded by that community, to keep going. And that's the biggest takeaway I've gotten from you today.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Keep going.
Keep going and pick up the drums. So we're gonna end with a game, like we said a million times already, and we thought, since you went to Juilliard, we thought it'd be fun to play a game called Juilliard or Not. How original. I couldn't think of like Juilliard or something else.
I've been waiting my whole life for this game.
Well, let's see how you do. Jay, you know what we haven't done in a while? Cue the music. The music. Okay, so
comes in post.
Yeah, comes in post. We're gonna list off names of actors, and you're gonna say Juilliard if you think they went to Juilliard, or not if you think that they didn't.
If I don't get 100% on this, I'm gonna feel very disappointed.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Jay, you want to take the first?
Yeah, Jessica Chastain.
Juilliard.
Correct.
Correct.
Adam Driver.
Juilliard.
Correct.
I went to school with both of those people.
Oh gosh.
Damn. Well, we just wanted to start off easy.
Sure. Mariska Hargitay.
Not.
Good.
Yeah, Danielle Brooks.
Juilliard.
Mr. Brad Pitt.
Not.
Robin DeJesus.
Juilliard.
No. Ah. Oh, it's all right. You're on a streak. You got it back, though. Sarah Meraz.
Juilliard.
Correct.
Chrissy Teigen.
Not,
you're right. Ellen Pompeo.
Not.
Correct.
Viola Davis.
Juilliard.
And?
Patti LuPone.
Juilliard.
Correct. That's really good. You got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Robin is going to be so happy that you thought he went to Juilliard. I can't wait to tell him. Robin didn't go to school. He just
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you listen to the first episode of Survival Jobs, a podcast, you can learn a little bit about his history.
The second one, second episode.
Our first guest. Yeah. He just got booked and blessed right away.
Booked
and blessed.
Nice.
Oh man, Steven. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Are we gonna do it?
No,
sorry,
go ahead. It's Monday and we're like, who's talking today? Go ahead, Jay.
Now I was gonna say, where can everybody follow you if they're not following you already on the social medias to keep up to date with all the good stuff happening?
I am on Instagram and Twitter at SteveBoyer5000.
Ooh, 5000. There you go.
Yeah. There's no N. It's just Steve Boyer. Steve Boyer podcast. Which
go.
Sometimes gets people are like, I can't do it. I found Steven Boyer 5000 and you're trying to sell me Ginsu knives or something. And I'm like, that's not me. That's not me. Yeah.
That you don't want to talk about.
Yeah. That's right.
Do you know the Instagram for the show for Kimberly?
I think it's Akimbo Musical.
Yes. So follow it. And if you guys are tuning in because you're a Steven fan, Steven, and you don't follow us at Survival Jobs Pod on Instagram and Twitter, on Facebook at Survival Jobs, a podcast. Shoot us an email at survivaljobspod@gmail.com. Thank you, Steven.
Yeah.
By the way, at the end of the episode, I have this question. Do you like going by Steve or Steven?
I get this question a lot, and I know that there are people that call me Steven, and most people I think call me Steve. I know there are people that do call me Steven, and in my brain, I don't even register. It's all the same to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, great. I'm glad we saved that for the end.
Yeah, because it's such an interesting answer.
So important. But thank you so much. This was amazing. Everyone, go see Kimberly Akimbo. What theater is it at?
The Booth.
Back to where it started.
The Booth.
Full circle.
Wow, amazing.
I love that.
Yep. Thank you
all
so
right,
much.
We'll see you there.
See you at the booth.
Meet us at the booth, guys.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.